This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Go to FUBARradio.com for more details. Mark Nolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
Somebody remind me where I am, Miami or Timbuktu. Did I ever tell you my uncle's monkey ran away from the zoo? Would you tell me what this all means? What happens if I go through that door? 'Cause I'm looking up at the ceiling, but it's turning into the floor. Ooh, when I'm bored, I kinda drift away. I'm not sure.
Send him a tweet.
Can we?
Here we go. Donald J. Trump. Hashtag make America great again. What shall I tweet him?
We here at FUBAR Radio think you're a monster. What have you got to say for yourself? And then put brackets. DJ Joey Page once had a dump in your tower. Because I did. I went in there for a shit.
Oh. Wow. That's the way to stop it, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Block up the...
Block up Trump Towers.
Dump towers.
Lovely.
More like.
Every Wednesday. Joey Page. From 1 p.m. on FUBAR Radio.
They call me Mark Dolan and this is FUBAR Radio and Mark Dolan eats the news. Over the next hour, I will be digesting the week's biggest stories in front of top comedians Jake Pickford and Leo Kirst. Boys, welcome to the studio.
Thank you for having us.
Hello.
They sound on song. They're bringing their A game today. It's a big one. We've got a lot of big stories to get through. I hope you've had a good week. We got breaking news, which is Oscar Pistorius has been sentenced to 6 more years of imprisonment, but it will be reduced to 3 years. But it's going to be house arrest, which doesn't sound like a punishment to me. I've got quite a chaotic life. I feel like I do with a stint of house arrest just to get on top of the ironing. Hillary Clinton has been in hot water over the use of a private email account to do government business. I can confirm, because I'm an insider in Washington, that it's true. I also happen to know she sanctioned the invasion of Afghanistan on Snapchat. Big changes at Top Gear. Just think, the next time Chris Evans gets in a car, he'll just be going somewhere. The teachers went on strike this week, and you know, I sympathise. My cousin is a teacher. He was on strike yesterday, and it was horrible. You know, it's not a fun thing for him to do. He just spent the whole day just drinking beer, watching Jeremy Kyle, and playing Snake on a confiscated iPad. I mean, that's not fun. I just love that music. Yes, indeed, it is Mark Dolan, and this is the name of the show.
Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
Now, joining me in the studio to digest the week's biggest stories are two luminaries from the world of showbiz. It's Jake Pickford and Leo Kirst. Boys, welcome to the show. Brilliant to have you.
Hiya, Mark. It's great to be here.
Now, listen, lovely sunny day in the United Kingdom. It's almost like Brexit never happened.
Yes. Yeah. After, because we had terrible weather. It was almost like we were being punished by God.
Yeah.
We had terrible weather. We lost to Iceland. I mean, I say we, obviously, I mean you.
Yeah. That was another kind of Brexit, wasn't it?
Everything went bad.
Where were you in that tournament? I forget again.
Oh, we went out to, I think we went out to Germany, Poland and France,
rather than
going out to Iceland, who have never beaten us. We've always beaten them. To put that into perspective, Scotland gets beaten by the Faroe Islands.
Oh, well, listen, it's a very, very good point. Listen, boys, be kind to each other. Here's the thing. I mean, obviously, when we had the Brexit thing, we got the announcement. You got the feeling that apocalypse was going to happen. Clearly, the pound dropped in value, which was quite dramatic. But apart from that, it kind of feels the same. But that's basically a little bit like when you find out the nuclear power station down the road has just exploded or is like leaking uranium. You're not going to find out immediately. You've got time to finish your cup of tea and you know, have a look at like The Guardian online and maybe masturbate. You've got time for the basics.
Well, you'd better masturbate because you wouldn't want to have any children, because just like Brexit, it's going to punish the children. Your children are going to come out with like webbed arms like squirrels.
Yeah. Three eyes,
and just the same with Brexit, the children are going to pick up the pieces.
Well, the thing is, why I'm spooked is that everything's kind of the same. I know the pound has dropped in value, but otherwise the stock market has held up and everything's okay. But it kind of isn't okay, is it?
I'd like to contest that, because the stock market, certainly my stocks and shares, which I've got obviously got buckets full of, are getting hammered.
Really?
Yeah. And I mean, I don't have any investments in commercial property funds, but that's quite good, because these funds have now ceased letting people cash out. So they've ceased, you know, people can't like sell their shares in these funds anymore, because if they do, they're going to have to sell all these assets at a fire sale, because the commercial property is now tanking.
Right.
Residential property is going to follow suit. The economy is going to follow suit. I mean, these things don't happen overnight. But yeah, the stock market is going to be pretty screwed. And that's even with the cheap pound making shares cheaper. It makes UK shares cheaper. It makes our exports more competitive.
And that's also with record low interest rates as well.
Yeah.
I suppose the question is, when's it going to like really turn to shit? When's it going to feel horrible? Because it does feel like we're watching a car crash in slow motion somehow.
Yeah. I'd say Tuesday.
Okay. Now, Jake Pickford, Am I right in thinking, and I certainly don't want to out you in any particular context, but I think you were for Brexit, weren't you?
I was for Brexit, but not in the sense that I was
not in the sense that you thought it was a good idea.
No, the typical Brexit voter.
I was for Brexit, but I voted Remain. And here's what I mean by that: is that I like the idea of leaving the EU and being an independent nation, but in practicality, it was never going to work because it was set up for so long.
Right,
and it was. Like this whole Article 50 that we need to evoke and go through all the laws and sort of subtly change them now. It's too much work. That's why Cameron was. You know what I mean?
You wouldn't have to do it, Jake.
No, I feel like I do. I take this personally. But you know what I mean? Like, it was never. I feel like this is almost never going to happen. You know, unless someone gets in that's kind of a borderline psychopath and wants to completely. Dismantle the country.
Is there a tiny chance that Brexit won't happen?
Oh, I think, Brexit, in terms of what people voted for, in terms of stopping immigration, all that sort of stuff, that's definitely not going to happen. Britain can't function without having immigrants and without having access to the single market. So that's going to continue. Basically, there's going to be loads of bureaucracy and uncertainty, which is just going to damage the country for a while.
Well, I know. I mean, the immigration is good for this country. You, for example, Leo, a very good example of successful immigration. You arrived in England as an Asian lady 14 years ago.
Yeah. Look at me now.
And
I think there's something in the water.
Your contribution not only to our culture as a comedian, but your previous career as a sex worker is just, I mean, it's a credit to you, I've got to say.
And a stir fry chef, don't forget that.
So that was the dirty work. That was the bit you didn't enjoy. But I mean, clearly it's madness and bonkers. It's not going to go away. In fact, what's tedious is I feel like we'll be having this conversation for 10 years.
Mm.
That's the problem. We're stuck with this narrative, aren't we?
Every week on FUBAR Radio.
Brexit update.
Yeah, it's so boring. I just feel you guys have been doing lots of shows since I last saw both of you. I have too. And since the Brexit, I have asked audiences, make some noise if you're happy about Brexit. I have not had a squeak out of anyone.
Right, yeah.
Now, I don't know whether some people are sort of shamed into...
I think you're doing posher gigs than me.
Really?
Yeah. I haven't even brought it up.
But the nasty sting in the tail has been the Brexiteers, the people who voted Brexit who regret it, and all those that said it was a protest vote. There's not many. I mean, there was no celebration, was there?
No.
I didn't see anyone celebrating.
There's the opposite of a celebration. Even Farage and Boris had faces like, you know, these sort of, oh God, what have we done sort of faces. You know what I mean? Like the hangover after a night of debauchery, which they're probably familiar with as well. But yeah, nobody really wanted it. I mean, they instantly resigned. They instantly reneged on their promises. And everybody, a lot of people who voted for it have said, you know, oh, actually, it was just a protest vote. I didn't really want it to happen. And it's like, how do you screw that up? You had two options. How do you screw up two options?
But that's where it goes wrong. A protest vote works if, for example, you have like four or five parties and they're protesting by voting for UKIP. That works, right?
Yeah.
Because there's nothing to happen.
Yeah.
But when you have a black and white yes or no, don't protest. Don't be a dickhead. Like, you know what I mean? Just
but that's maybe the problem with referendums. I think I'm done with referendums now. I think, like, for example, in Scotland, if Scots want to leave, enough people should vote SNP that they're in a majority government and they just take Scotland out.
Yeah.
I think in England, if we want to leave the EU, there should be UKIP should form an overall majority in the House of Commons, put the vote through Parliament and we leave.
Yep.
I think it should be done through political parties and their manifestos.
Yep.
This referendum thing, it hasn't been great for Scotland either, has it? The referendum in Scotland about Scottish nationalism divided communities.
Yeah.
And Scotland still, I think, bears the social scars of that vote, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And also, I mean, the SNP have got like such an overwhelming majority in Scotland now, and they're actually not that great. They're very socialist.
Really?
They
really?
Can't balance the books. They're very autocratic. So I think that's going to come back and bite Scotland eventually.
But they've got the word Scottish in their name, and that's basically what it is, isn't it? Really, you know what I mean? Like, that's all it is. It's just the pride thing. And people hate England, and I can't speak for Scotland. Obviously, you can more, but people just hate England so much.
Should somebody who wanted to leave be the Prime Minister next? Should a Brexiteer get the top job in the Tory party and therefore Prime Minister?
It makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Really?
Why?
Well, because that's what, regardless of whether you hate the outcome, it's what happened and you have to accept that, and the people in charge should reflect the population's views. I'm all for referendums. I think that the problem with referendums is this country failed to manage it properly. But if you look at like Switzerland, for example,
yeah,
countless referendums, seems to be a fine country, works tremendously well. Yeah. I think the problem is the way that the campaigns were.
I think what works for Switzerland is it's got does have an excellent democracy and, as you say, regular public votes, and also about $200 billion worth of Nazi gold. And I really think that's a tremendous foundation for a nation, isn't it?
So we're doing all right on the gold front as well, though.
We are. You're absolutely right. Yeah. Well, listen, there was a little bit of drama this week because Ken Clark, who I think it's fair to say, guys, I don't know whether you agree with me, but I think he's the Tory you're allowed to like, discuss. Mm.
Yeah, I mean,
he's sort of he's got jolly,
that,
isn't he?
He's got that
jazz.
Bumbling, you know, sort of. I mean, he made loads of money from tobacco, but also you sort of get the sense he smells of tobacco, which is quite a nice sort of uncle-ish thing to do. You know what I mean? Yeah, well, he doesn't just make money from it; he smokes it. You know what I mean?
Well, that's exactly right. And he's certainly one of the more human and real politicians in Parliament. He was on Sky News this week doing a Q&A interview with Kay Burley. However, I don't know if it was before or after, but either side of the interview, he was sort of being mic'd up and preparing to go on air, and therefore chatting quite animatedly and quite openly with Malcolm Rifkin, who's another Tory MP who used to be Foreign Secretary, and they're just sort of chewing the fat about the leadership race, not knowing that their comments would be broadcast. They were not live on TV, but Sky made the decision to release the footage. We're going to discuss the ethics of that, but let's have a little listen first of all. Here is Ken Clark in action, if I can get this thing going.
But it's what a fiasco.
I don't mind who wins as long as Gove goes and comes third. As long as Gove is not in the final two, I don't mind what happens.
I don't think the membership will vote for Gove.
No, they won't.
I remember being in a discussion once about something we should do in somewhere like Syria or Iraq, and he was so wild that I remember exchanging looks with Liam Fox, who's quite a much more right-wing than me, but we exchanged views, and Liam was raising eyebrows. I mean, I think with Michael as Prime Minister, we'd go to war with at least three countries at once. He did us all a favour by getting rid of Boris, who just... the idea of Boris as Prime Minister is ridiculous.
And that could have happened.
I don't think either Andrea Leadsom or Boris Johnson...
Okay, there's been a gremlin in the system and we've lost Ken Clark. But essentially, it's a private conversation. They're in a TV studio. Now, Jake, it's an elementary mistake. If you've got microphones around, you really have to watch what you're saying, even if you think you're not on air.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
But I just wonder whether it's quite out of order to actually release that footage because, you know, they weren't expecting to be on air. Discuss.
I mean, they'd have done it with any other party. Why stop?
Well, no. My point is, should that happen? Should that happen at all?
Yeah, they're in the public interest. The opinions. Yeah. I don't think that you can have sort of like, where do you draw the line? Or which information say they were saying something detrimental about somebody else, and they weren't a politician? Where do you draw the line? At which point do you stop that information from being leaked? It's like a political version of the Jinx, isn't it?
Maybe on paper, Leo, journalistically, it's understandable. Sky News is a news organisation.
Yeah, you can tell it's got news in the title.
And they are, in a way, they'd be missing a trick if it happened under their nose in their building.
Yeah.
And if a news story happens in the building, their kind of duty is to report it. But then again, I just wonder whether
do you think this has really caught Ken Clark caught off guard? I mean, he's been a politician for 932 years. You know, he helped Moses get into power. I don't think he made this mistake. I think this is as set up as those photos of Taylor Swift and Tom Hiddleston.
Whoa!
That's what I'm saying.
And what's your allegation about Taylor and Tom?
Well, I think they're all
set up. You think it's just a showbiz marriage?
Yeah, because he wants to be James Bond or something, and she wants to be Madonna. So, like, they're just setting up these photos to get in the papers,
and
his profiles, and sell records.
I never expected to hear a sentence that contained Ken Clark and Taylor Swift in the same. I just wonder. Yeah, I think journalistically it's understandable, but I still think, in terms of Sky and what they've done, I think it's poor form.
Really, but it's in the public interest, and it's really entertaining.
It is really entertaining. I agree. I tell you what, though, it's only going to make politicians even more tight-lipped. If I was Ken Clark, I would refuse to go on Sky ever again.
I'd cancel my subscription to Sky Broadband.
I'm not refusing to go on Sky ever again because I need the work. But I think that he should serve as a matter of principle. But it was entertaining. Have you chaps ever been caught off guard, either sort of making a remark while the person you're talking about is in the room, or indeed on stage? You chaps, you work with microphones.
Yeah.
Every thought is broadcast in one way or another.
I sort of got caught out on Saturday night with my girlfriend was a bit drunk, and I was talking to somebody who was like organising this Avalon stage in Edinburgh. For somebody like me, you know, I'm the pond life of the comedy circuit, so on some Avalon stage in Edinburgh would be amazing. And so I'm like, yeah, that sounds brilliant. And then the girl sort of turned around, and my girlfriend turned around to me and was like, well, she was irritating. It's like, really loud. I was like, ah. No.
I suppose the crime that Ken Clark's been guilty of here, and that we all get guilty of sometimes, is just telling the truth, because that's what he's just done. It's a rare for a politician to be candid.
Mm.
And so I suppose that's when in life generally you get in trouble, when you're just honest, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've definitely sent the wrong text to the wrong person about that person.
Yeah, I just got it, Jake.
That was meant
very hurtful.
Yeah.
Sorry, man. Okay. Sorry, that was meant to be sent to Ken Clark.
But you strike me as quite an honest person, Jake. A bit of an open book as a person, in a good way.
Yeah, I like to try and be open. This is why, I mean, it probably goes back to what Leo said. It probably was set up entirely. It probably was meant to be leaked. They probably just sat there planning it all beforehand, because that's what most of them do. This is all a strategic strategy.
You think it is? Yeah.
Yeah, you know, as opposed to the own strategic strategies.
Tactical strategy.
Yeah. But it was, you know, it's the same with Michael Gove stabbing Boris and all the rest of it. I think it was all planned. Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, we'll hold fire on that. Careful, we're going to keep the microphone switched on. We're just going to tell you what the show is called, and we'll move on to our next story.
Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
So, great news in the world of retail. The first 10p supermarket has opened. We've had a Brexit from the EU, and the arrival of the first 10p supermarket. Does this tell us something, that there's a connection between the two? Would you shop in a 10p supermarket where everything's 10p?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I treat Asda like a 10p supermarket most of the time. Just on the bottom shelf searching for bargains.
Yeah. I mean, it's true that I think it started with a downturn, didn't it? But that we are now the value generation. Since the sort of credit crunch of like 2008, 2009, the global financial crisis, everybody, rich and poor alike, love a bit of value. Lidl and Aldi, fastest growing supermarkets in the country.
Absolutely. I mean, the social stigma of shopping at Aldi or Lidl is gone now. It's evaporated. So now
hipster, isn't it?
Yeah, and you get like olives and hummus in there. You know what I mean? You can get all your middle class foodstuffs.
And also, essentially, a fishing rod as well, and cordless power drill.
Yeah.
Which is like, that's my standard weekly supermarket shop. You know what I mean?
Yeah, remember when the Lidl at Finsbury Park opened, it was like Hamleys for grown ups. Because they have all those things like the fishing rods and the sort of toys, you know, the telescopes and stuff like that. Yeah. And everybody would just get them out of their boxes and play with them in the shop. It's great.
And a lot of polyester.
Yeah.
I mean, that central aisle is the ultimate fire hazard, isn't it?
I love it.
You go in there with a lit cigarette, it's game over for everyone.
Always in the middle as well. They have the obscure fuse down one side, the alcohol down the other side, and then just like
those are the only two aisles you need, really. I think you'll find. I have to cover, but you have to cover both aisles. I cannot go into an Aldi or a Lidl and not check out the hall. I mean, I could. Yeah. You know what I mean? There could be an incident going on outside, but I've just.
Which there probably will be, because it's a Lidl.
It's a good point.
Does that have a high likelihood? I went into an Aldi. I live near an Aldi. There's one in North Finchley. And I went in there recently, and for £5, right? I've only got a fiver in my pocket. And I come out and I've bought a ridiculously big block of cheese, right? Mm. Massive bag of potatoes and three members of staff. Right? There's just a Romanian lady in my kitchen now. And I think that's value, isn't it?
Right.
It's like the acceptable face of human trafficking now from Lidl. You just get people and you just put them in the back of the van.
Yeah.
It's humans. But what sort of value options do you go for, Jake? You're a Lidl and Aldi, no problem. Primark. Do you draw the line at anything?
Oh, hell no. No. Why would you draw a line?
There was a big moment with Primark when the government introduced this 5p for a carrier bag, and it meant that you go to Primark, sometimes the most valuable thing you come out with is the bag.
Yeah.
It's like, it's cheaper just to
cut armholes in the bag. It last longer.
Things are going really well. Yeah. I've got to look at this 5p I've spent. Everyone's like, ooh, who's he? Look at you, Mr. Jet Set.
Does this 10p store charge for bags?
That's a very, very good point. Right? Maybe that's key to their business model.
But their inflation is like 20p a bag.
Yeah.
Well, looking at their business model, I'm not sure that I'm behind it, because they took £285 from customers.
Yeah.
On their first day with all the sort of media exposure and stuff. So £285, that's not profit. And I can't imagine the margin on a 10p item of food is going to be that big. You know what I mean? Well, it definitely can't be more than 10p. So I'm not sure how they're going to make a lot of money from this.
Well, I suspect you're probably right. But we're going to crack on now, and this is the name of the show.
Mark Dolan Eats the News on FUBAR Radio.
Okay, now talk about the show must go on. This week, as reported in the mirror.co.uk, a singer has his tooth removed with pliers to perform at a wedding. Yes, indeed. Brave Sam Johnson, frontman of band The Sound, was due to play at the reception to bash out some tunes for the bride and groom. But before taking to the stage, they were treated to a hog roast, and Sam bit into a piece of juicy crackling and broke a tooth that was left hanging from his gums. He was determined to sing, so one of his bandmates found a pair of pliers in a toolkit, yanked the tooth out, and he had a Jaeger bomb as a painkiller. So here's the question. Toughest gig you guys have had?
My appendix removed once while I was
on stage.
By
a particularly nasty heckler?
No.
The appendix was fine.
By a Romanian that used to work at Lidl.
Nice reincorporation, I like it.
Yeah.
Were you on stage with the appendix?
Just hanging out. Yeah, it was giving me some problems. So she just, you know, she came out of nowhere like a ninja, like a doctor ninja.
So have you had your appendix out?
No.
You haven't?
No, all of that was a lie.
I love it though. But you're very good. You're very convincing.
Thank you, right?
There is something about being a performer that you, unless you're actually sort of just dying, you get on stage, don't you?
Yeah,
it's the nature
absolutely.
Of the business.
Yeah. I had a thing. I was in Australia because I thought I'd drop that in because I'm a famous international comedian. But like, I was nice. In Australia and like I was doing deadlifts and I crushed a disc in my back and I was in agony. You know what I mean? Like, I went back to my hotel room and I laid down in the bed and I couldn't get up.
Wow!
I literally couldn't get up. But I had a gig, an unpaid gig for Nick Coppin, the hardest taskmaster in comedy. But I had to like just crawl. I was sliding along the walls to get to the gig, and it took me about 45 minutes to walk. There was only, you know, a few hundred yards, and I was in absolute agony and just dripping with sweat and couldn't, just wincing and dripping with sweat and died horrifically.
I think it sounds lead. Luckily it's all on YouTube, so if you're bored this lunchtime, go and have a look.
It's my showreel.
There was a woman who performed in Eastern Europe, and she had a snake as part of her act. She was singing. And it seems like the kind of popular culture scene in this particular country, I can't remember if it was Bulgaria, I must say the location escapes my attention, but essentially it's not enough just to sing while you're on stage. You've got to have like a live animal on the go as well. She gets bitten by the snake and finishes the song and then dies.
No way! Yeah.
Hashtag legend.
What a way to go out though, right?
Wow. Sounds good, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Sounds amazing. Now, listen, let's crack on, because I want to get to our next story on Mark Dolan Eats News. And by the way, we're very open to your input at FUBAR Radio. Dolan at FUBARradio.com is the email address. Here's a issue with you. A vegan restaurant promises to end world hunger, but it closes without paying staff. Everyone's an expert with the virtue of hindsight, but did it really seem likely that a vegan restaurant in Manchester would eradicate world hunger by 2040? Give Kitchen was funded by Paul Hampson. It's closed its doors after 3 months. The restaurant, which pledged to give away a meal to homeless shelters for every meal purchased, closed its doors without paying staff their last month's wages. Two questions. One, it turns out being good just doesn't pay, does it?
If everyone was good, then nobody would need to get paid.
That would really help, wouldn't it?
Yeah, right.
This reminds me of another story which dovetails with that, which is Pret a Manger, the sandwich chain, have opened their first vegetarian cafe in central London. Have you guys seen it? Are you aware of this? Have you been there?
I've heard of it, yeah. Yeah. But I don't understand, because I like eating meat, because I see myself as the king of all animals, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I'm top of the food chain, so I want to eat.
And every
eat
time
them.
You eat meat, it reminds you of your status in the animal food chain.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And you absorb some of the power of that animal.
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. I went there to a sort of fact-finding mission for the show, because, you know, I'm very committed to the show. And let's see how it is. I went to the vegetarian one, and it was such an awful experience. The service was really slow. The staff were so tired, just lying down, listless. And that's all I've got. But
without those lists, how are you going to know what you're going to what you're supposed to do that day?
It's not good, is it? Although I do think that big business is the key to saving the world, because I think you look at sort of how food companies work, and it's all terribly exploitative. But the flip side is, I think if an organisation, if a corporation decides to be nice, they could like make big changes.
But then, I mean, I think things are just getting better anyway. I mean, for example, looking at laundry detergent, now all laundry detergent, virtually all laundry detergent, is really environmentally friendly. But companies don't like to advertise this. Some companies obviously like play on this, but most companies don't want to advertise this because then people will think that their laundry detergent is less effective.
Yeah.
So they actually keep quiet the fact that it's now environmentally friendly.
It's the same with Sprite, for example, owned by the Coca-Cola company, who have taken 33% of the sugar out and not told anyone.
No way.
Yeah.
Really?
Right. Yeah. Sprite, I must say, it's a brilliant development, and this is sort of an example of how a big company can, you know, make the world a better place. So what they've done is they've developed this plant extract called stevia extract, and it's a completely natural thing. It's a plant, and it's, if you mashed it down, it's super, super sweet, ultra sweet, like 10 times sweeter in taste than sugar, but has no calories. So stevia extract is in Sprite, and it means that on average, you've got about 10 or 11 grams of sugar per 100 in a standard soft drink. In Sprite, it's 6.6.
Right.
That's good.
Amazing. Yeah, so, you know, it's these little incremental improvements. But you do think also, like, if Pret decide that they're going to commit to having a vegetarian store, and then there's another one, and there's another one, it feels like it could be... There's a slight sense that capitalism can lead the market, lead public tastes, and therefore create change that way.
Yeah. But, I mean, all these places are vegetarian anyway, if you buy the vegetarian sandwiches. Mm-hmm. I want the option to get, like, the rhino horn one or whatever it is, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know you do. I mean, you came in today with amazing snacks, because you had, like, biltong, which is, like, dried beef, and he's a lot of seafood, sweet. Like a half a salmon still blinking.
Nice.
And also just a lot of ivory.
I've got the milk that came out of a cow. It came out of a cow. They pulled it out of a cow.
I know that.
Put it straight in the car.
I'm drinking it because I'm the boss of cows.
It absolutely suits you very, very well. You're listening to Mark Dolan Eats the News. Shortly, we're going to look at the TV shows that you would like to return, and much, much more. It's Mark Dolan Eats the News. Here is Beck and Wow.
So nice. clown.
Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio at 12:35. The UK's largest ad-free online radio station. We're taking a lively canter through the week's big stories in the company of Jake Pickford and Leo Kurse. Boys, here's the question for you on a Wednesday afternoon. Would you upload your brain to a computer? Experts reveal what it would take to live forever digitally. Yes, indeed. People have always dreamed about going beyond the limitations of their bodies, the pain, the illness, and above all, death. Now a new movement is dressing up this ancient drive in new technological ways. Referred to it as transhumanism, it's the belief that science will provide a futuristic way for humans to evolve beyond their current physical forms and release these dreams of transcendence. Now that's a load of gobbledygook. It basically begs the question, if you could somehow download your brain, Jake, onto a laptop, would you do it?
No, because it's not living. The whole point of living is dying. People automatically go, oh, I don't want to die, so I'm going to upload my consciousness into a computer. First of all, we don't know where consciousness comes from in the first place. We just sort of have a rough idea of what thoughts might be and how they work and whether it's determined or whether it's free will and things like
but
that.
Isn't it the person that's the real value, their personality? If I look at me, isn't it my soul, which is my most beautiful thing? It's not my
if you're on a hard drive, we're changing every 7 years, right? So all of us, but after 7 years, none of our cells in our body are the same. You know, taste buds every 10 days, spine 7 years, you know, all of it changes. So if you put your consciousness on a hard drive, surely it's only going to be the consciousness that you have at the time at which it's uploaded. And then you miss out on all the beautiful changes that happen to us as individuals.
But isn't this about when we're sort of about to die? Isn't that the time when you do the upload?
I did mine in the 80s. Uploaded mine to ZX Spectrum. So the game Jet Set Willy, that's my consciousness.
That is amazing. Yeah. So Leo Kurse's soul is on a C60 audio cassette.
Yeah, and you can download it over the radio. Remember that? Remember recording games on a cassette with a...
It's amazing. It's amazing. I mean, I suppose it's just that question of, it is a form of immortality, isn't it? It's a little bit like when your iPhone is about, well, let's say it's broken and you're getting rid of it. You go to the Apple store and they make sure you've backed it up. And if you've taken the whole soul of that phone and put it into the cloud and then onto a new phone, surely that's what we'll be doing with ourselves.
No, but the thing is, that analogy sort of works, but we don't know what death is, right? And the fact is that people look on the unknown, right? Yeah. That one time I choked myself for a minute.
You weren't at that gig last night in Islington, but okay.
But this is the thing, is that we don't know what death is. And people, it's kind of like the Brexit thing, right?
Yeah.
So people fear the unknown, okay? And so they don't want to do it. Death is kind of like Brexit from life. We don't know what death is. We don't know whether it's like a dream that feels amazing. We don't know whether it's a horrifying
experience. Other words, you're saying that death is like a human right and we shouldn't be denied it by technology.
To actually die
and properly leave, not like when I'm at a party and say I'm going and an hour later I'm still making my
exactly, we can still experience what, like, the to quote Wake in Life, the neo-evolution of human, you know, as we kind of intertwine with what we've managed to create and we control our evolution that way, then great, do that, but don't prevent death.
I'd quite like to prevent death, not for other people but for me. I'd quite like to be a robot, like an invincible robot.
Well, isn't the only real weakness of ourselves is our body?
Yeah.
Because the soul is perennial, really.
Yeah. The soul's a sort of invention. I think we've sort of tricked ourselves into thinking there's something metaphysical beyond the human body, just because we sort of need that to to not be nihilists and kill ourselves. But yeah, I mean, the issue that I've got with, like, if I upload, if they recreate my brain on a computer and it functions exactly the same as my brain, and like gives the, so to all apparent purposes, to all my friends and family, they're like, oh my god, this computer's Leo. But then it's not. I'll still be over here. I'm watching this computer that's like doing a simulation of me, but it's not me. So I'm still, if I die, I still die. There's another copy of me that like doesn't die, but I'm dead.
Also, it's terrible to think that your personality and soul is just a program on a regular laptop, and someone's going to own that laptop, and you're on there, but they're also using the laptop for other stuff like checking their Facebook and surfing for adults. Entertainment. Yeah.
And they get a virus, then I start running slowly. People think, why did they clone this guy? He seems slow. You know what I mean?
That's it. I mean, I guess there is ultimately the best form of immortality is art, isn't it? If you think of William Shakespeare or Picasso, the way that they've sort of downloaded their brain is by creating work, which we continue to enjoy. Maybe that's the best way.
Yeah.
I'd say the ultimate best way of being immortal would be not dying, though.
I mean, it tops art, I'll be honest with you. Yeah, I mean, it's slightly better than art if you were just there.
All right, can I have an age for you then? If you, in terms of how long you'd like to live, what's a good figure?
72.
Really? Tell me more.
I just think it's a good number, you know? I'd like to die in an
elaborate
way. So
I'm going
to
turn up to your house on your 72nd birthday.
Absolutely.
It turns out you've really looked after yourself. You're in good shape. You're jogging regularly. You have your lunch at the Pret vegetarian restaurant, right? And I'm like, Jake, you said it was today. You're like, I feel great. I've got energy. I'm still getting, I've got a semi at the moment. I've still got a libido. Look at this.
I'm a man of my word, Mark. All right.
So would you take yourself down? No, because the bottom line is you can't really have a number because you don't know when you're going to start feeling like crap, do you?
Mm. I think that's the number, though. The moment at which you start feeling crap. The moment at which you're suffering beyond what you're willing to put up with.
And do you think we should have the right to press the button and say, I'm done, I'm out of here?
Yeah.
Well, it opens up a Pandora's box of people being pressured into committing suicide.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, it should almost be kept. Obviously, in some circumstances, I think people should be allowed to do it, but it should be like, you know, applying for a new driver's license. It should just be so complicated that people don't want to do it.
So, yeah, sort of inertia and laziness and fear of bureaucracy is enough to keep a lot of people alive.
Yeah, yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, it would be great for murderers, wouldn't it? It would be a fantastic way for murderers to operate, is that they get the victim to do it.
Yeah.
Psychologically convince them to kill them. Yeah.
Because this is quite close to me and my heart, because I'm very, very sad. And you probably know recently we had to make that tough decision to let my grandmother die. And it was really hard because, you know, well, first of all, it wasn't a dilemma. You don't mess with psoriasis. And, you know, it was in that whole Venn diagram of sort of itching and redness, which I think, you know, is no one wants to see someone suffer in that way.
At the age of 57. I mean,
do you know what I mean? Yeah. She struggled, obviously.
And only going to get worse.
It took longer than we expected.
Push the pillow harder next time, you know?
That's it. But, you know, it's a strange one. So I think ultimately there is the idea of taking your soul and, you know, the weakness of our body. The thing is, our bodies are... They are finite, aren't they? The body's like a bicycle; it's subject to wear and tear.
Yeah.
Hmm. Whereas the brain. I mean, you get. Look at Stephen Hawking; his body is pathetic. His brain is extraordinary.
Yeah.
Sure.
Don't we want Stephen Hawking's brain just in a jar, and he can just carry on teaching us?
Yeah.
No, because there'll be future Stephen Hawkins. Hawkins only knows what he knows because of the environment that he's in. The world will progress, brains will progress, minds will progress.
All right.
I don't know if brains will. I think the current technology and stuff distracts us. It stops brains from creating those long neural networks that we need for really deep thought.
I think you're right. People used to just go for long walks and develop ideas.
But yeah.
But I think that's a general bit of a... I mean, everything is a generalisation, but the fact is that you, in the same way that we have it as a distraction, what you wrote on the Huffington... Was it Huffington
Post? Oh, yeah, yeah, I wrote a piece for the Huffington Post, yeah.
But, I mean, it's also the access to unlimited information at our fingertips, you know, and it's just about how people choose to use that. People chose to write books, people chose to read books. You know, when we didn't have phones, there were still people that would do things without any form of creativity behind it. And it's just the way that the world has progressed. We've now got this, all of this information at our fingertips.
All right, well, in that case, let's say that there's a limited number of souls or brains that we can download or upload into the cloud that we keep forever. You guys don't want to do it. You're not in. But whose do we want to keep? Because I'm thinking there's a few characters out there who we probably benefit from hanging on to. I think Stephen Hawking's contribution to our understanding of the universe is probably quite helpful. I think probably he gets in.
Yeah.
I'm thinking...
Bill Nye,
definitely, because where would like English rom-coms be without him?
I meant all right, yeah, close enough.
Who's Bill Nye?
Science guy.
Oh, Bill Nye. Okay, all right. Tell me more about Bill Nye. I'm more interested in Bill Nye.
Bill Nye is a fantastic...
I used to do a lot of improv when I was a student, and you've got a rule in improv, which is you take every suggestion. You say yes to everything. Mm. Every suggestion is great. You go, oh, help me with this wheelbarrow. You go, sure, give it to me. I'll take one side. What you don't say is not a wheelbarrow, it's a horse. You can't do that.
Yeah,
and I was using maximum improv spirit when you said Bill Nye. I'm thinking, Bill Nye? Okay. All right. Let's run with this. We've got Stephen Hawking and Bill Nye. That's a little bit of a drop down.
Hey, all right.
Who's Bill Nye?
Science guy. What's he done?
What's he invented?
Invented?
Yeah.
Well, he's a theoretical scientist.
Is he good?
Has a lot of, yeah. So you know the movie Interstellar?
Yeah.
A lot of his science went into.
Oh, all right. I'll take that. Is it Sandra Bullock? Right. I'm in. So, okay. I'm thinking Anton Deck. It's got to be, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Billy Connolly, maybe, for the Scots?
Yeah. Although we'd better be quick. There's who else? Carl Sagan.
Yes.
Carl Sagan, great thinker.
Who's that? Who is that?
He invented science or something.
All right. Oh, and the famous console, the Sagan Mega Drive, right?
Yeah.
Come on.
Sagan Mega Drive.
It's a bit late to get Steve Jobs back, but I'd definitely have downloaded Steve Jobs.
Steve Jobs, who else? I'm just trying to think of brainy
most
people.
Of the good people. It's been like a bit after the Lord Mayor show, isn't it? Because David Bowie's gone, Prince is gone. We've lost a lot of the great John Lennon. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We are sort of struggling.
Yeah,
Malala.
I am Malala. Good we'll take shout. take Malala. Yeah.
And that'd be an interesting one because she's lost part of her brain.
Yeah.
So it's going to be easier.
I tell you who it would be nice to make immortal would be the Queen of England.
Oh.
I mean, I'll tell you why. First of all, she's showing no evidence of any plans to die.
Yeah.
But I think it would be a hilarious prank for her to live forever, just for how annoying it would be for Prince Charles.
We'd have to make him live forever as well.
That's it.
Yeah, we'll just have to see if this works on lizards.
That's it. I think he's going to then have to hope that the batteries fail on the old computer that has downloaded the Queen or something.
But David Icke is another one that
David
I would make
Icke.
Live forever, just
of course,
so I
just
could have those. Because a lot I love about David Icke is 99% of what he says is amazing, and I totally agree with. And then he's like, oh, and they're all lizards. And it's like, damn it, David, you're so close.
I think Brucey would be worthy of some kind of lifelong existence because you wouldn't need to ever find any more game show presenters. He could just do them all forever.
Doesn't he already?
Yes.
Yeah, so him and Anton Deck, and you've pretty much got every single hour covered.
Well, look, speaking of who it is that you would preserve forever, what about bringing stuff back? Because the BBC have announced that they're bringing back a Goodnight Sweetheart special, which is the time-travelling sitcom starring Nicholas Lyndhurst. Very hard thing to be in two much-loved iconic sitcoms, but Nicholas Lyndhurst managed it because, of course, he's Rodney in Only Fools and Horses and very well-received in Goodnight Sweetheart as well. A show I never really engaged with particularly. I don't know what you guys think.
Nope.
Yep, I never really saw it, but I think it's interesting that they're bringing back some shows. I think it shows the poor state of ideas that get onto TV these days. I think it's because the agencies pick sort of young, malleable people who don't actually have any good ideas. But yeah, there's some other shows that I'd like to see coming back, like Life on Mars. We do a new series of Life on Mars where like a policeman goes back in time to when people are actually more racist. Less racist and less... less intolerant.
Well, exactly. It's going to make Life on Mars looks like the good old days now, doesn't it? Compared to the culture of intolerance. It's true. I mean, post-Brexit, probably Mind Your Language will be returning at some point. Now, are you familiar, Jake? You're probably too young to know about Mind Your Language and our audience, which was a sitcom in a language school which featured every single stereotype of Italians and Africans and the French and everything. And it was ripped off the air. But, you know, by the sort of late 80s, it had become an embarrassment for ITV. But it was a hit show at the time.
Sounds fun. I would like to see Spitting Image come back. That'd be a fun one.
And it's funny, all the people on Spitty Image, they're still around, like Ken Clark. Ken Clark's still in the new. They wouldn't even need to change the puppets. He still looks exactly the same.
Amazing.
Maybe he's been downloaded to his own Spitty Image puppet. You could have like a ZX Spectrum up the arse of one of these puppets.
It's a great idea.
Immortal politicians. I'd vote for that.
Yeah, and Ken Clark could just do himself now. He's not that busy. He could actually just
yeah, exactly.
He could do the voice,
couldn't
he?
He's not going to be on Sky again, is he? Yeah. So he's got plenty of spare time now.
Just tell him he's not on TV and the Comedy Gold will just pour out of him. I wonder whether with a lot of sitcoms you can't really go back, can you? I mean, like, would you guys watch a new series of Fawlty Towers?
That's the thing about bring back. Does it mean bring back with the actors now and bring back and just hope that they're as good? Or does it mean
I've got a view on this, which is I think if I don't think you should bring anything back. But if you do, it has to be the original cast and the original writer.
Yeah, yeah.
Therefore, if a key writer is gone or the key talent is gone, I don't think you can remake Only Fools and Horses because John Sullivan, who wrote it, is dead.
Yeah. And also, I mean, when they try and bring back popular shows with different characters, like they reintroduced Top Gear, but the Jeremy Clarkson character had been written out of the series and replaced with this guy called Chris Evans, played by Chris Evans, and it was terrible.
Tell me what you think, and I'm glad you're taking this out. So another big story of the week, of course, is Chris Evans deciding not to participate in the next series of Top Gear.
Yeah.
What went wrong? Was it just Chris mainly?
Mostly it was Chris. And I mean, because Top Gear wasn't really about the cars around, it was about Jeremy Clarkson swaggering around being an oaf.
Yeah.
And without somebody doing that, a lot of the draw of the show had disappeared. Chris Evans is too high pitched and reedy to fill that role.
Yeah, for sure. Also, I think his mistake, Jake, was to make the show about himself. I think his comfort zone as a broadcaster is to really author it and to own it. And that was the brilliance and the genius of TFI, is that it was very much the Chris Evans show.
Yep.
It was suffused with his sense of humour, his ideas as a producer, which in those days were outstanding. But I think his mistake was that he tried to do a TFI with Top Gear, and instead he should have approached it as a presenting gig and thought, here's this show which exists, which is very good, and I'll host it. And I wonder whether that might have been the way he should have done it.
I don't think that would have been any better. I think he was the major problem. Regardless of the format, it was him. I think the people that generally enjoy Top Gear the most are never going to enjoy Chris Evans hosting Top Gear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it should have been... I can't think of anyone that could have done it, really.
Yeah.
Because Jeremy Clarkson was perfect for that gig.
Yeah.
I don't like him, but he was perfect for it. He made it completely watchable for most people.
Maybe Nigel Farage
perfect.
Could do it now.
I think that's not a bad shout.
Boris Johnson would be fantastic.
Oh, Joe and Farage together.
Oh, what a combination.
Yeah.
That'd be beautiful.
I mean, just crashing every car.
All of them.
Like walking away from the wreckage.
Yeah. it would be. So what do you think, Runners and Riders, for next Top Gear presenter?
Oh.
Matt LeBlanc is currently
that's
in
a
it,
weird one,
which is surprising. Although he's been in a way a surprise hit, I would say, on the show, just because he was an antidote to Chris Evans's manic energy. He was quite natural, quite chilled out, quite normal somehow.
Yeah. I think Gordon Ramsay would be good.
That is a good shout. Yeah.
Well, what about you? Just got obviously a big American sitcom, which is Friends. So why don't you partner him up with Rose from the Golden Girls? I think it'd be great. The jeopardy of putting her in a car and going at 200 miles an hour is quite potent.
Watching her trying to reverse park, I think would be.
That's it. Just getting into the short stay car park at a local Tesco. That's an item, isn't it?
I'm thinking Roy Hodgson's got not a lot to do now.
No, he most certainly doesn't.
He could host it. Cameron.
Now, you've helped me out here with another story, which is that tonight Wales play Portugal in the Euro 2016 competition. We're not a big football show, not a big football station, really, but this is a national event. This is Wales in the semi-final of a huge major competition. I think we can all agree we're all in Team Wales tonight. Am I right about that?
Yeah.
It would be churlish not to, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
A friend of mine said, oh, you know, I'm not supporting Wales. I said, why not? He said, because they were laughing at us when we went out. It's like, no, they should laugh at us.
I want them to not laugh.
They've got to.
Yeah, exactly.
So we're supporting Wales, and therefore, what do we think of Wales? Do we love Wales anyway?
Absolutely. I think they're fantastic.
I love Wales.
As a football team as well, they're basically like England without the media pressure. They've got just as good players, if not better players.
They
got
on a quarter of the money.
There's no sort of pressure. Their fans are more passionate and less jaded. They've got no history to kind of for people to look back on and be like, oh, we won in 66, we should win now. It's like, fuck off, that was fucking years ago, you dumb twat.
I wonder whether there's a sort of echo of, you know, our sort of foolish self-delusion about our football team is the same with our delusion about our country.
Yeah.
And it's the same 1966 World Cup mentality which provoked Brexit, which is us thinking we're better than we actually are.
Yep, absolutely. It was great to have that defeat to Iceland come so quickly after the Brexit vote, because it must have just taken the wind out of all the nationalists, you know what
absolutely.
I mean? Absolutely. A real slap in the face.
Because you knew it would be used as a metaphor in the other way otherwise, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Clearly.
You know, the only thing that could have topped off that perfect rule of three is if the Queen died after we left the Euro, you know? Brexit, Euro, Queen death. That would have been a beautiful
slam
week
dunk.
For me.
We would have just committed harikiri in the street.
Yeah.
So what do we like about favourite things about Wales? I'm going to chuck a lot of stuff in there. I think Wales are brilliant. My brother-in-law is Welsh. He's a great guy. He's a proper man's man. Do you know what I mean? He's got facial hair. He's strong. He can lay a carpet. He can plaster a wall. He can erect shells. I think he's such a man's man. I think that I would let him make love to me. I'm not a gay man, but if that's something he felt needed to happen, I would let that occur.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's just a man.
Yeah.
So I think the Welsh produce men.
It's great for you
men.
To come out on live radio.
It's perfect. It's very Michael Barrymore, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I think Tom Jones is a pure
similarly,
great
he's
example.
The sort of man whose shoulders come to the bit in shirts where your shoulders are supposed to come to. You know
That's
what I
it.
Mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think so. Well, you get a city. Cardiff's great for comedy, isn't it?
I went to Cardiff like about a month ago. It was brilliant. Did the Jonglers there? Not a real trepidation because I thought this is the Jonglers and it's in Wales and it's in Cardiff. This is going to be tough, but they were the best fun.
Of course. Nope, you've got me. Any bad experiences in Wales? Anything negative?
Oh, my mate had a heart attack there, actually.
You mean like
that's just a good night out in Cardiff, isn't it? That's a sign of a well-enjoyed weekend. Boys, it's been, on that incredibly autobiographical note, a wonderful treat to have you. Jake Pickford, Leo Kirst, thank you for being here. Can I get your Twitter handle so you can build your enormous fan bases?
My Twitter handle is Comedy Leo. That's Comedy Leo.
Nailed it.
Wow, mine's at Jake Pickford.
Well, Jake and Leo, you've nailed it. It's been a real treat. There's no Brexit for my friendship with you guys. I'm afraid you're in it for the long haul. It's been a real treat. Thank you for listening. I've been Mark Dolan, and we've been Eating the News. I got a girl who's so good.